Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and man, what a fun show we have lined up for you today. Going over Halloween Part 6 and finally finishing up the month of October with another Halloween film, never to be watched again until the next Halloween, because I'm Halloweened out. I've had enough. And this is the most I can take. I can't go through more of the series until next year. So you'll have to stay tuned until next October to get some more of that action. But this episode, we got some fun stories from a show I went down to in Baltimore, a nerd comic event where a good friend of the show maybe had a little mishap. You're going to want to hear about that. Also, Ashley has some tragic news. Get ready for that. Her train wreck of a love life. But hey, guys, if you love the show, you love listening to us, make sure you tell a friend. We're just a small little mom and pop organization. Any help that you can throw out there means the world to us. And hey, leave us a 5-star rating and some positive comments. Always helps out. Helps us push through the algorithms of shit that people like to listen to. So, anyway, without further ado, get strapped in, pump that volume up to 11, and get ready for Halloween Part 6, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Yesterday, I went to this nerd event with a Laugh Finder, and I was dressed as punk rock Spider-Man, which, you know, it was fine. It was just, I have a Spider-Man costume. There is a thing, such a thing as a punk rock Spider-Man, so that's what I went as, right? Called that's Tommy awesome. Cimbazzo up. I was like, hey, can I? You got little fucking armband leather thingies, you fucking nerd? And of course he did, so I picked them up on the way, and then so I wore that. But as, of course, you know, it's a nerd comic event, right? And it's outdoors. It was at Power Plant Live. Of course I'm going to run into other Spider-Men. And I found one, and by the way, the nerds don't like when you refer to him as Spider-Man. Okay, if you call him Spider-Man, I'm Peter Parker, and I'm a Spider-Man as well. They don't like that. So,
did you just say Peter Parkour?
Yeah, Peter Parkour, where I do parkour.
It's so, kind of ironic that, you know, he is like the original parkour. So
yeah, he's fucking so parkoured. So anyway,
the Spider-Man that can only traverse like maybe 6 feet in all of his going around the city at a time. So
they used to call me Ashley Parkour because I would always give hand jobs in parks. Parkour.
Nice.
But hey, in the meantime, welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and I'm joined by my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
I don't know who you're talking to.
Who am I talking to on that show?
It's me, Paul Rudd, otherwise known as Ant-Man. I'm glad to be part of your show today because, you know, this was one of my first early movies before Ant-Man, and now I'm all famous.
I'm personally a Paul Rudd clueless guy, but that's maybe that's just me. And I'm also
Clueless. That was a great movie. This is that dumb blonde girl. You know, she's stupid, and she was like Batgirl or something.
Yeah, Alicia Silverstone, who lost her fucking mind and actually has videos online of her feeding her child like a bird. Real story, man.
Hey, women love eating birds. You know, like they just eat them out of the nest out of bushes and just chew them up like candy.
Oh, no. Jerry's, of course, referring to the horrifying video of a Chinese woman who's like gardening out there, and she finds like a little baby bird nest, and she's like, oh, look at these baby birds. And she just takes one and eats it raw, and it is absolutely fucking
horrifying. Well, I believe that's totally racist to say she's Chinese, because I think she's from Laos, which is a totally different country that over there, true. And where all them Asians live, even though they look the same.
Yeah, she's from whatever country Michael Cera is from, so I'm pretty sure. Anyway, I'm also joined by the very lovely, the very talented, our other co-host, Ms. Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you, love?
Oh, hi. I'm good. Actually, I love that he brought up the story about Alicia Silverstone, because I also feed my young by myself, but I'm like a sea urchin. I feed them through my bottom.
Yes. Hashtag butt miracles. Okay.
Still plenty of protein left, and it works for any human centipede.
Yes,
it's very liquefied.
I learned my child caring from some people get the Dr. Spock's book. I have the book. I have the Dr. Dieter book. It's pretty good. Hans Dieter. Jeremy, you met Hans Dieter, no? Or I don't even know if his first name is Hans. I just know his name is Dieter in the
No, shout out to Dieter Laser, who just died this year. And very sad, because I did shoot him many a message through Facebook, and he was my friend through Facebook. And pretty much anything human centipede related, I sent him things, and he'd say, like, oh, thank you very much, or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. He never made it to America. Well, I think he did his Texas show, but I only met one of the members of the Human Centipede, and she wanted to take a picture with me with the Asian guy, and she's like, oh, I want to be here. And I'm like, no, you are the centipede, just like Dieter said. And if anybody's ever watched Human Centipede, my favorite line is when Dieter is yelling at the centipede when he says to feed her, which is yeah. Telling the Japanese guy to forcefully poop into this woman's mouth. So
I'm a big fan of the I'm a big fan of the South Park human centipad episode, where they
That's
make a human
funny.
Centipede that can power an iPad, and they have the same Asian guy at the front and Stan stuck in the middle. And he's like, oh, Kyle, what do you want me to eat? He's like, should I eat this vanilla paste or this cuttlefish? And he's like, cuttlefish, cuttlefish, cuttlefish. And he's like, did you say, or he's like, vanilla paste, vanilla paste, vanilla paste. And he's like, did you say cuttlefish? Okay, Kyle. And he just starts screaming and shitting into his mouth. Oh, you know, it's such a great episode. Such a great episode. Episode. Now, yesterday, I talked a little bit about a pre-show. Yesterday, I was at a nerd comedy event. It was an outdoor event down at Power Plant Live, hosted by this gentleman, Kevin. Really nice. Usually, it's like, you know, without social distancing involved. This is a really big outdoor event, right? In like the main courtyard back area of the power plant down in Baltimore. And big stage. There's a couple other acts that are there. You know, we're there as Laugh Finder, the sister podcast that I'm on. We just did about like 30 minutes of comedy. Each of us did like 7 minutes or something like that. First of all, I need to mention that me, Tommy, and Brian, we are merely we're the most not important, least funny people at this thing, because when Dorian Gray is dressed as Violet, hits the stage at a nerd comedy event, you would have thought Louis C.K. was at this event. Fucking a crush from the first minute Violet opens her mouth to the very last sentence, just crushes every single joke. We were just like, yep, I don't even know why we went. I don't even know why we went at all. And like, shout outs Violet Gray, a.k.a. Dorian, absolutely demolished both shows we had yesterday. But near the end of the show, we stick around, and there's a costume competition for everybody, okay? Now, to explain how the stage is, you know, it's at the back of Power Plant, and it's not perfectly rectangular stage. It's kind of like a back corner where there's like wiring and stuff that's kind of like cut out of like the back section of the stage, right? So as contestants are coming up, we're on stage, we're supposed to be judges and like riffing and stuff like that. They ask us to move to the back, and I remember looking, I was like, whew, man, there's a big ass hole right there at the back of the stage. Glad I didn't fall in that. And as I was thinking, man, that was a close call,
I watched sweet Brian Preston fall back first off of the stage, 5 foot onto the concrete in front of everyone. It was, I remember seeing it happen. I was like, oh, Brian, don't fall. And I was just like, why are you still doing it? Oh my God. And he fucking takes a full WWE back plant, fucking slam. Luckily he didn't smack his head, but you could tell they like, oh shit, I just fell in front of everybody. He tries to pop back up, but as soon as he pops back up, he doesn't see that there's like this control panel that has a door. He hits the door and the door slams back and hits him in the head. It's literally like watching a Three Stooges thing happen. And then I'm watching him stumble around like a deer in headlights, not like a deer learning how to walk. I'm like, Brian, stop moving. There's wires everywhere. So we had to like calm Brian down. We're like, it's okay, man. There's a lot of shit there. I think you might be disoriented. Maybe just chill for a minute. So they went out there. I am wearing a mask, and thank God, because the monster I am fucking crying right now. As soon as I realized he wasn't permanently injured and could walk, I'm fucking in tears right now. Me and Tommy are looking at each other like, oh my God. Yes. So we sat there as Brian, after that first show was over, we went to the 7-Eleven and got him some ibuprofen. And I don't think he's ever going to forget about falling off stage in downtown Baltimore and doing a full back plant.
Man, that is so sad, but also I'm a little disappointed. Did you not get it on tape?
I don't know if there was cameras rolling, because if there was... it wasn't going to be a good angle, because all you just see is, oh, there's Brian, and now he's gone. And just because if you were filming from the front, I had the best view, because I just was like, I was standing to the side of the hole, and I just watched every part of it happen. And I was just like, oh my God, no, Brian, no.
Kind of like the video from Signs when they're like, look, the alien's walking across the screen, and now it's gone.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
like that.
Poor Brian.
So, shout outs, Brian Preston, for taking it. He did send me a picture at about, I'd say midnight-ish last night, to me and the Laugh Finder boys, with just like this giant mark across his ribs, and I was like, oh, that doesn't look like it's gonna be good. But a little internal bleeding was worth the laughs.
I've got some of my own. A very special young man did my blood test this weekend, and I think it might have been his first time. I don't know if you can see that, but it's but yeah, my whole arm is bruised right
here. Whoa, yeah, looks like the bitch from The Ring grabbed you.
Yeah, it's real gnarly. I'm pretty sure it's like an ink blot test, and you can start seeing like what my what my inner thoughts are. Be like, everybody look at it. What's wrong with Ashley? Take your guess.
Oh, yeah, a little Rorschach
test.
Some
guy was sucking on your arm. You just got to tell the truth.
Not anymore. I told Eric.
Arm sucking.
So what...
I told
No, go ahead, Ash.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, not anymore. I unfortunately told Eric that I unfortunately ended things with my very nice man, but I'm always open to anyone other than whoever Eric suggests.
Yes, so. Pretty much. If there's a suggestion that Eric's throwing out there, bring yourself a fucking trash bag, a gallon of lube, and a couple of corn cobs, because we're about to have some fun.
If Eric ever comes to you, like, I have like a life partner for you, just throw it in the garbage. Like,
I did not suggest your most recent boyfriend. I never even met this guy.
Unfortunately, that is true, and that is on me. Nothing wrong with the person, just not the right connection. So that is fair. Ashley 0, Eric 1.
Well, I do know one single. Actually, I know a couple single people. I could maybe. Have you heard of the great Chris Restivo? Have you ever thought about maybe going on a 5-plated date with him? Ashley, your silence hurts.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. Remember, we keep having audio issues with my Scarlett machine. It's fine.
No, that's cool. So yeah, the boyfriend we talked about like two episodes ago.
I know,
it's no more.
It's so embarrassing. Mm. And that's on me. I'm the one that ended it. Super nice guy. But no, that's embarrassing. That's the lesson here, everybody. Don't have hopes and dreams because they will not come true.
Mine are all very, very low, so I'm never disappointed. Jeremy, what's up with you, brother? We've missed you. Obviously, you missed out on Halloween 4 and 5 last week. We got real in-depth with the Mike Moran, who stepped in your absence. What you been up to, brother? How's the work front going?
I'm pretty much like a robot now. I put boxes inside of boxes, and then I put them on a pallet. And then I put more boxes inside more boxes. And then I put them on a pallet.
I like that your favorite game growing up, you've now grown up to live that in Boxy Boy.
Well, it's okay because I do it for only 12 hours a day. So, but at least there's actual air conditioning where I work and I don't sweat like the ginormous pig that I am. So.
My pig.
And I get yelled at 99% less than I was at the other part of my job where I was making $4 more an hour. So,
man. Well, I do have one thing that I wanted to bring up, folks, before we got into tonight. We don't have any Joe Robinson corrections, which is fine, but I did get some input from Joe Robinson about the Halloween series. He just wanted to mention that he thought it was very, very funny that in Halloween 1, Michael Myers can drive. He thinks that's the funniest thing he's ever
straight
heard.
Straight out of an institution.
Yes, because he has been institutionalized since he was 9 years old, and he breaks out, and he not only can drive, he drives really well and knows how to, like, shadow people in a car. So
that's true.
Oh, I guess the real news of this week would be the notification I got from Joe 7 minutes before he played the theme song for the Purple Power Hour on 98 Rock, which is now my theme song.
Oh, yeah, congrats awesome. Jeremy. Yeah, Jeremy was featured on 98 Rock last week. I guess if you guys are listening to this 2 weeks ago, it was rumored that perhaps it would be a recurring theme song on the show, but only time will tell as Jeremy has finally made it to the big leagues, being featured as a musical artist on the great, mighty 98 Rock WIYY.
And I have to say that it was Mac Bergson who gave me the suggestion to do it, and I was like, yeah, I guess I have a chance of doing it, because Joe usually shits on everything I do anyway.
That's
so
okay. Me too, Jeremy.
Hey, that's Joe's brand. That's
why don't you
brand.
Tell your woman jokes?
No, the new thing has been, you're mentally ill, stay away, she's dangerous. So I'm like, oh, Joe, you are just a treat.
Tonight on the comedy lineup, Ashley Pontiac. Yeah.
Ashley Pontiac.
I love you, I love you, Jeremy. I am so very proud of you. This is very, very exciting. This is cool.
We have to have women as part of the comedy tonight.
No, go ahead, Eric.
I was also going to say there is another correction, not necessarily a correction, but something that a fan pointed out of the show. I saw on our message board, and I totally missed this and didn't even notice it myself. So I had to do my googly, let my Google fingers talk. Didn't realize Halloween Part 2, Dana Carvey is in Halloween Part 2.
What?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Dana Carvey is in the opening scene of Halloween 2. The report, they have like the reporter that says, we're live in front of the Myers house, blah, 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 blah. And then they show this paramedic and you're like, I need you to go check for this. And the guy he's talking to is Dana Carvey in like a trucker hat.
Wow.
He's like, uh-huh. He has no speaking role and he's in and out
That's
in
crazy.
Like a couple of seconds. So Dana Carvey, look at that.
Oh. You know, my other favorite cameo is in the original Death Wish with the guy who's digging tunnels.
Charles Bronson?
Charles Bronson.
There you go.
At the end of the movie, there's a cop who almost catches Charles Bronson, and that cop is actually Christopher Guest, otherwise known as the guitarist from Spinal Tap and was also on Saturday Night Live. Waiting for Guffman and every other, you know.
That's crazy.
movie that's come out with those guys. So
I didn't know that either. That's awesome. Well, that's not only is that amazing, because I never would have expected Christopher Guest to maybe, I don't know, quote unquote, do a role like that. But it's also funny to see, like, with Dana, because it would have been great if they're like, what gives this monster power? And he's like, pops out and he's like, Satan. Like, that would have been great.
Oh, if you want to take it back real fucking long ago, my other favorite cameo is from the movie Psycho. Because at the end, when Norman Bates is sitting in the room alone, the cop that's standing at the door to close the door is actually Ted Baxter from Caddyshack and Too Close for Comfort. And you just see the tiny face of like, yeah, it's Ted Baxter. Like, oh, you're not going to join this chorus. No, please, Rodney Dangerfield. Oh! So.
Speaking of Rodney Dangerfield, I do have one last thing. So there's a local comedy promoter. His name's Brock Schneider. I don't think he listens to the show because this might... Well, it doesn't matter. I'm going to share it with you anyway. I have nothing bad to say about Brock Schneider, okay?
Damn it.
I have nothing bad to say about him. But he invites me and tries to book me on shows. They're generally not a high-paying thing, but he invited me to do 7 minutes. So it was a little bit of money involved in it, not a lot. And I looked at where this place was, and it was an hour and 40 minutes away. And I was like, okay. And it was on a Wednesday night. I was like, ugh, like that. Now, for our listeners, if you don't know, we do Laugh Finder game nights on Wednesday night. We go live on Facebook. We have a good viewership of this. I mean, it's pretty decent, right? So instead of telling him the regular excuse, which is, it's valid, it's I have Laugh Finder game night, instead, I said that I have my daughter's soccer practice, but then I doubled down and lied and told him I'm also an assistant coach, kind of like Rodney Dangerfield in Ladybugs. So I crafted this lie, and he was like, oh, man, that sucks. But there was no questioning. He didn't ask me to skip Laugh Finder one night or anything, because I knew if I told him I just had Laugh Finder and I don't want to do it for, you know, an hour and 40-minute drive there and an hour and 40-minute drive back, that he would say, oh, come on, man, help me out, blah, blah, blah. But I knew if I said, oh, I got a thing with my kids, I'm also an assistant coach, he wouldn't question that. Now, fast forward to yesterday, I'm seeing Tommy Simbazo. He's like, hey, did you tell Brock Schneider that you coach your girls' soccer team? It was like, yes, I did. I did say that. So I did. So I didn't have to go to a comedy show.
Wow. So now, there's so much there. Like, I'm terrified by the amount that you lie, because I think every time Eric's like, Ashley, you're the funniest woman, like, I know, I'm like, oh my God, he might be lying. So I can't trust anything you say to me anymore, especially when he's like, the beautiful, the very talented. I'm like, you fucking liar.
No, I only lie to make my life more convenient. That's not a convenience to me, is telling you that you're lovely and talented at all.
You needed a female co-host.
Yes, I need it. A, we needed a female co-host. B, no, I do. I think you're very funny and very talented. I wouldn't have asked you to be on the show if that wasn't the case.
How can I trust you? But
also, it helps that you're some dumb slit. So,
but I also love that I'm just like waiting, knowing now what I know about Joe. I'm waiting for you to lie in front of Joe Robinson and for him to just call you out on that in front of a crowded room of like 300 people.
I don't know if I'm a pretty, it would be hard for me to, I wouldn't lie to Joe because his lie detector is so good. I know he would question anything that you say. So no, I don't think I would. I would just tell him, I'm not fucking doing that. And he's like,
I didn't say you'd lie to Joe. I said you'd lie in front of Joe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I could see. If I'd done that lie to Brock in front of that, he's like, this guy doesn't fucking, he's never even played soccer. Are you kidding me?
Eric doesn't have kids. What are you talking about?
Yeah. That's something Joe would do. All right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, now that you didn't drive an hour and 40 minutes. That's that show. That's $20 you missed out on, fucker.
Okay, I'll have you know it was $40.
Might have paid for the gas.
Might
Man,
have.
I'm a female comedian. I was going to do it for free.
Hey, hit up Brock. He's looking for it. Say, I'll do it for Eric's 40.
I don't ask for shows.
I also, I don't know why this came to mind, but I just because I'm thinking of this nerd show from yesterday. They were doing all these cool costumes and stuff, and I thought about next year, what if I cosplayed, hear me out, as Farley Quinn, which is Chris Farley as Harley Quinn.
Yes.
Now,
with a very small jacket.
Yes, it's a very it's a tiny jacket like this.
Extra small daddy's little monster shirt so that you're actually destroying it wearing it.
Yes, and she's like, you're going to think you're fine until you're married to the Joker and you're living in a van down by the river.
By the way, Ashley, since you don't know me well enough and I haven't showed you because you're a female. I think it was last year, unless it was 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago. Time flies when you're having fun. I got invited to a party of real big pogo fans up in Philly, in a really, really bad neighborhood in Philly.
Nice.
But they were cool kids, and the guy warned me, like, oh, I live in a bad neighborhood. And I was like, well, how bad it is? I live near Baltimore, whatever. And he was like, oh, that's a bad, bad neighborhood. So anyway, I go to the place and they're all into, like, you know, death and weird odd ability shit, like skulls on the fucking walls and
I get it.
Like that.
You know, your regular run of the mill Satanists. Go on.
Right, right. Well, they didn't actually eat a baby in front of me, but they were definitely into weird shit.
Nice.
But I got paid very heartily to dress up as Pogo, and the little bomb that's still waiting to blow up on me, you know, the little landmine that I had set, was that I think both of the girls there were strippers, including the guy's wife, and definitely got pictures of me with them naked.
Hell yeah.
Oh.
By the husband taking pictures.
And if you go to our website, you can check out the Quality Time Emporium, where you can get those nudes on a t-shirt, Pogo the Clown nudes. By the way, shout outs to our web store, the Quality Time Brothers Emporium, where you can get your Pogo the Clown gator, which shout outs Dave Draper, he was donning it last night, our first purchaser. And man, does that fucking gator look great or what, Jeremy?
It did.
It looks enormously huge on his face, obviously not sized correctly, but it's all your mouth.
It's all your mouth. It's just, it looks so fucking gross. I love it so much.
It does look pretty cool, I'm not going to lie.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, this year for Halloween, I'm planning to go as a diva cup, because men just assume that I bleed everywhere.
Nice. Yes! Oh, man.
I don't understand that, but I like it.
So anyway, let's get into tonight's topic as we close out the month of October.
You wanna play the theme for it?
We're going over Halloween 6, which Jeremy provided this wonderful introduction song.
Oh yeah. You might have seen Halloween 1. It's not Halloween 2. Or Halloween 3. Not Halloween 420. It's Halloween 666. Halloween 666. Halloween 666. No, Halloween 3. Had nothing to do with Michael Myers. It wasn't even in 3D, which would have been good with those masks on. Like Halloween 666. The two extra sixes are for extra evil. Halloween 666. And they even add witches to this one. But it's not the season of the witch, no.
All right, Jeremy. Hey, listen, you had set the bar so low, I feel like you exceeded it. You jumped right over it, pal.
It was all free farm because I had like 2 minutes to get it done.
I love it. I love that just flows through your body. That's great.
You know, if they're going to make a Halloween 3D, or a Halloween H2O, they should have had Halloween 666.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. I see where you're coming from. There isn't a Halloween 3D, which is kind of a bummer because, you know, the other two major franchises, obviously Friday the 13th and
Jaws 3D.
Jaws is another one that had a great 3D. I wouldn't call it great, Friday, but a 3D movie. But
Friday the 13th 3D.
Yeah, and there also is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 6, Freddy's Dead, which has 3D for the last act of the movie. So that's...
Yeah, makes no sense whatsoever.
They could have called this Halloween stage 4 because we did lose Loomis.
Yeah. Well, where we left off was the shithole that we talked about, which is Halloween 5, that introduced a man in black and all types of shit and completely in my opinion is the worst Halloween film outside of Resurrection, which we'll have to go next year when we go over the remainder of the Halloween films. But here's a little audio taking us up to where we are now. You know, it was 5 years that had passed since they dropped that turd Halloween 5 on horror fans' doorsteps, and rumors were spreading left and right about the direction of the series.
The rumors flew. John Carpenter was making the new film, and it involved sending Michael Myers into space. Jamie Lee Curtis would be returning. Quentin Tarantino would be writing and directing the new installment.
Quentin Tarantino took a stab at writing the screenplay for Halloween 6. He wrote an original version that they ended up not shooting.
None of these rumors came true, and another battle took place for the direction of the series.
When we finally went to Halloween 6, there were bids by Miramax and New Line, and Miramax got the bid.
The new film in the franchise was to be a major studio release for the first time under Miramax's Dimension Wing. The responsibility for the story, however, wouldn't be falling to a studio writer, but to a long-term die-hard fan, Daniel Farrens.
I was 12 years old when I was sitting in the living room of my house in 1981 watching the first NBC showing of Halloween, the original movie, and I sat there alone and in the dark and watched this and was terrified and then riveted, and from then it became a thing where I was completely engrossed with these films.
Farrens had the task of tying up the numerous loose ends from the previous installment. He also decided to go further and do something that many were apprehensive of. He was going to provide an explanation for why Michael Myers would not die.
So, Daniel Farrens, who is essentially just a fanboy that came up and was like, I can fix the series. And keep in mind, he's making... I kind of take like Halloween 6 with this in mind. It's like, you ever seen like the cooking shows, like Iron Chef? They're like, here's the ingredients you got. Make something with it, right? That's kind of what Daniel Farrens was dropped on. You're like, hey, guess what? I need a sequel to Halloween 5. Yeah, that shitstorm where we were like, yeah, Jamie's going to be the new Michael, but then we backtracked that, and then we showed you a guy who's in boots that breaks him out at the end. Here you go. That's what he's starting. He's starting off with a big fucking penalty already to start. And I will say, he tried to write something that made sense. He really did. He really took the parts, and it was just like, yep, all right, I'm going to explain this shit. This is what's going to happen. But I think it's a problem that is just in the worst part of this is trying to explain the boogeyman. He's best when he is an enigma and just scary for the sake of being scary. Like, you think you might know what it is, but you never get a real explanation. That's what was the beauty of Halloween. And unfortunately, they had painted themselves into a corner. And here's a little bit of a cod on what he thought of Halloween 6.
You can't keep it mysterious for 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes. I mean, you have to give in some so that you can exploit some new characters so that you develop stories. Otherwise, he stays mysterious and then you lose interest.
So, I love any clip that we get to play with a cod. He's just, I love the money-making aspect. He's like, we need to make money, so we need to explore new categories, right? Kazakhstan.
But I don't think he's wrong completely, because here's the thing. With, like, Jason, we pretty much were given Jason's backstory up front in the very first movie. And then we do get a little more, what did we say, insight? I think it's like 6 or 7 mm-hmm. when he gets resurrected, you know, through the like telekinetic whatever. We get a little bit more there. I think we don't question it as much with Jason, but I think it's a fair point that he makes that on some level you have to give a little bit of reveal somewhere. I'm not saying it was executed great, but you do kind of have to give some reveal before it gets to the point where people don't understand his motivations. And though I know some people like that about him, people are going to get sick of him and be like, well, I don't understand why we keep watching this. Like, some people will watch for the gore. Mm-hmm. It's like a Saw movie. Right. But even the Saw movies, there's a backstory to why killings happen. So, I mean, I kind of agree with him. It wasn't executed great, but I understand where he's coming from.
So, I think that's kind of the tone I take with most of Halloween 6 is that, you know what? This one, I don't hate it because they tried. They really did try with this one. But you had mentioned, you'd heard in some of those clips before that now this is the first studio release, which is by Miramax. And if you guys aren't familiar, Miramax is run by the Weinstein Company, which is good old monster Harvey Weinstein at the helm of this one.
And which of these actresses were touched?
Yeah, we're maybe going to get into a little bit of that as we go through here. But there was lots of problems working with Miramax during this process.
Filming did not go as planned. Director Joe Chappelle had his own unique take on what he wanted to do with the film, which greatly conflicted with Farron's vision.
Joe Chappelle had no interest in Halloween 6. He had an interest in getting the three-picture deal with Dimension, and that was his sole purpose of doing this horror film.
I met with one of the Weinsteins. He had wanted a big makeup effects extravaganza. I was happy to do that. You know, that's great. However, in the subsequent weeks, the producer kept cutting back the effects, wanting less and less and less and less. And I'd hired the best crew in the world to create the most complex, over-the-top special effects you've ever seen. And they were frustrated on set because they weren't really allowed to do anything but stab people.
So so that's problems between Akkad, one of the producers, who does, to a certain extent, like the idea of the original Halloween films. They don't show a lot. They're not Jason films, although 5 had kind of had a little bit of gore. Miramax comes in, and they're like, nah, we want a motherfucking Friday the 13th, spinal cord showing, fucking murder fest. And so it definitely caused some tension on the set.
And can we mention the most important part that you missed?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that they're already at the end of their rope when they're talking about Michael Myers going into space.
Yes. Yeah. We have talked about that on past episodes about how that seems to be the, when they have no ideas left in a franchise, you have to send them to space. Of course, we talk about Leprechaun, Jason, Hellraiser, all famous franchises that went to the to man's final frontier, if you will.
Of course, I will probably put more work into writing Nightmare on Elm Street in space.
Yeah, because in space, you even your dreams can't hear something.
Now, I was thinking there was two ways they could have done a Friday the 13th. I'm sorry.
Nightmare.
Halloween. Okay. Halloween in space.
Okay.
Is that somehow, you know, Michael Myers is just wandering around Florida, and they, all of a sudden, he just walks up on like a space shuttle launch, and he's like, "Oh, astronauts go through this door." And he just kind of wanders his way onto a space shuttle. Or they can really build it up so it's like a government conspiracy, so that like the NASA officials, like, well, you know, it costs a lot to live in space, but if we could have somebody that's actually dead and doesn't actually need to breathe, we could save NASA a lot of money by sending Michael Myers up into space.
I have my own theories about how you would do Halloween in space. Okay, hear me out. I'm going to take you down. It's something I thought about for a long time. So So it marries together, first of all, to even make my Halloween in Space movie, it immediately marries into the Star Trek universe. So I'm letting you know right now, they exist in the same universe, Star Trek and Halloween.
Star-heck.
So what you find out is that Captain Kirk, he was actually stranded on an alien planet, and he fucked some weird alien thing. It had a lot of tentacles. It was super evil. He then produced a child. That child would be the original Michael Myers, right? The Michael Myers that he knew was evil. This is a bad Michael Myers, but didn't quite look like him, which is why they had to take him away from this planet and send him to Earth, okay? Which is why he picks up the William Shatner mask while he's back on Earth. That explains why he wants to be the real evil version of William Shatner. Now, flash forward, all the Halloween series, it's all been about fucking Michael Myers getting back to his home planet, because what happens is that there's this one planet where Captain Kirk has just been staying this whole time. He's been fathering more and more children, and all of them also want to murder their family. So all the girls and the women he has to send them to a different planet. He has to send them to the other one, and everybody on the Michael Myers planet, all they want to do is just go over there and do this. So Michael is taking that spaceship there so he can finally go there, pick up the army of Michael Myers that will then kill the whole planet of Strode, and then here's the big ending. We just see Jamie Lee Curtis's titties for like 20 minutes is the end. That's it. That's my movie, and that's all I got. And then William Shatner is...
If the Weinstein brothers don't buy that, I don't know who will.
There you go. Ashley, what do you think? Do you think you would go watch my Halloween movie?
I think I'd rather watch Chris Christie Vodou stand up.
So you're saying the most important part is the last 20 minutes of just Jamie Lee Curtis just kind of jiggling in the camera, or will she be on like a trampoline?
Yeah, I just deep fake the movie True Lies, except she's topless this time. That's all I do.
We're sold!
I am actually on board with that. I want to be mad at you, but I'm having a hard time on that one.
Yeah. So some other changes to
It sounds like an important plot point.
Some other changes to the franchise. They bring in Marianne Hagen, who joins the franchise playing Kara Strode, another relative of the Strode family. Though Miramax didn't necessarily want her at first.
He said, I mean, Miramax did not like you at all. Well, first of all, they thought you were way too thin. And he said, and they also didn't like your chin. I said, what? They felt it was too pointy. So I basically continued the movie like this in every shot. Like I became...
Yeah, so she just would cover... You'll notice it even in the movie. She like holds her chin a lot because she's been self-conscious. She's been shamed by one of the fucking Weinstein monsters. Who's just like, you're too skinny and your chin's too pointy, you fucking bitch.
That's crazy. Like, is this a film or is this an open mic? What is happening? Horrible.
J.C. Brandy is also brought into into Halloween 6 to replace the beloved Danielle Harris, the little girl from Part 4 and 5, to play Jamie Strode. Here's a little bit of J.C. Brandy talking about her inclusion in Halloween 6.
I was happy for the work, and I didn't find out till after the fact how fond the fans were of Danielle. But, you know, she's adorable in those movies, so I understand why they like her. I know that some of them felt I looked a little too old to be her at 15.
We tried her.
So, yeah, I do think that's weird. This lady, J.C. Brandy, she's supposed to be a 15-year-old version of that little girl from the last. She looks 35. 100.
Well, I'm gonna be nicer than you are and gonna say in her 20s. But yeah, I agree that she does not look 15. But can we also talk about how fucking gross that is? That they're like, yeah, at 15, we're gonna get her pregnant in this film.
Yes. Like, no, It's gross, but it is a horror film. So yeah, we're into gross shit. I get it. It's also a big debut added to the cast is none other than Paul Rudd in his very first theatrical debut, which now to take you back, I actually saw this movie in the movie theaters. I think this was the first horror movie I actually saw at the theaters with my sweet friend and former guest on the show, Mr. Sean Laskowitz, shout out They Live episode. I went to go see this movie with him in the movie theater. His mom bought us tickets. We were probably, I guess this came out in 95, so I was like 12 mm-hmm. or 13 years old at the time. And boy, oh boy, is it just, I remember walking out after seeing this movie, like, this is the best fucking movie I've ever seen. I've never seen a better movie than this in my life. This is what life is. So I do remember loving it. But whenever I see Paul Rudd on screen, knowing who Paul Rudd is now, I laugh every scene he's acting. Every mannerism he does, I'm just like, fuck yeah, Sex Panther. Hell yeah, brother. Like, all I see is hilarious Ant-Man comic relief Paul Rudd, and I can't see him in any other way. which makes this movie very, very fun for me.
He has, like, some weird accent, almost, it seems like, sometimes, that I can't quite place. Like, he's almost like he got tips from Donald Pleasance. Like, he's a young actor and he wants tips from someone better than him, but he's trying to embody Donald. So, which is also, you know what, I'm making fun of him on that one. But to be fair, I know, and you might get into this more obviously, Eric, but there is a difference between the producer's cut and the theatrical.
Oh,
in the theatrical,
yeah,
baby. Paul Rudd's character does the opening kind of narrative to the story.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the producer's cut, it's Donald Pleasance. And it almost makes me wonder that, you know, Paul Rudd was so, you know, enamored and taken with Donald that he tried to be him too much. And a lot of the times during that narrative, he's just going so hard where he's supposed to be this young man. And he's in his bedroom and he's like, I was there. I was a survivor. I'm like, come on, man.
Well, yeah, well, Paul Rudd's character, he's playing Danny, who actually ties back to the original Halloween film. He's the little boy that Jamie Lee Curtis's character is, Laurie Strode, is babysitting on that Halloween night. So he's survived all of this. I also do have this, and I'm sorry I skipped over it, but this is a little bit of Danielle Harris, why she did not return to the series in part six.
I didn't really like the way Jamie Lloyd died, but I had a lot of fans that sort of loved me, and for her to go out like that, I thought it was pretty crappy. So I went and met with the director, and we sort of talked about different things and ways we can kind of work stuff out, and wasn't really seeing eye to eye. So it became, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna make a little bit of money. Miramax basically said your character is a scale plus 10 character because you die in the first act, which is about what I made on the first Halloween about 8 years before. So I said, okay, if it's the way you think about me, even though this would be my third movie, then I don't think I'll be doing it.
So that's Danielle Harris's take of why she didn't return. Although, I don't know, I think I would have felt uncomfortable seeing a real-life 15-year-old Danielle Harris pregnant in the movie. It would have made it a very different film, to say the least.
I love this terminology they use, is scale plus 10. What does that mean? Is like the regular play plus $10,000?
Well, if you've ever seen Danielle Harris, what it means is that since they pay her by how much she weighs, and because she'd only gained 10 pounds since the original film, that they were only going to pay her that much more.
Eric,
how are you only making $40 at stand-up?
I hate myself. I'm terribly lonely.
So by the way, she is really tiny. She is almost like a child in size, like one of these like Hollywood midgets or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you know what? I do agree with her. Like, I feel bad because it would have been awesome to see her her back in her character. But I agree. Like, to know that your character is getting killed off like that so quickly, kind of at the beginning of the movie, why would you come back? It seems like such a letdown. And if you now have, like, a fan base and you've got notoriety, yeah, why would you let them do that to you as an actress and your character? I agree.
But this, even though she was not in this Halloween, spoiler alert, she does return to the series in Rob Zombie's Halloween, of course. So just throw that out there, that little tidbit, where she does get horribly murdered, probably for a scale plus 10 fee, I'm pretty sure.
Playing a totally different character.
Yes, she's playing a totally different character. That is true.
It's funny because I think the story with Gunnar Hansen is that they were literally going to pay him the same exact scale for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. He's like, no, I'm like the star of the film. I mean, this is the second film of the series. I should get at least something extra. And they're like, no, I just got to give you scale. You know,
isn't you're crazy?
Yeah, so he was like, F that. So.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, not to get us off of this film, but I'm glad you brought that up because I watched a documentary the other day on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I know that, like, the dude who played Gramps, who obviously has, like, really no lines but is such, like, a vital character to that story in that film, last I heard, he was a waiter.
Fucking loser. No,
I can't say it gets worse because there's Mark Torgel, who plays Melvin the Mop Boy from Toxic Avenger, while doing the film, while doing a stunt scene or a scene that was very nasty, said, I feel like I'm being exploited doing this. I didn't want to do the movie while doing the movie.
Now, not all of the one returning and the constant throughout this series does return for this film, and that's Donald Pleasance, obviously Dr. Loomis, who returns for his final installment of the series. Unfortunately, he did meet his maker even before the movie had totally finished shooting, so we'll get into that because they had filmed the whole movie, but then when they started to do reshoots, which we will get to, Donald Pleasance had already reached the other plane. But here's a little bit about Dr. Loomis.
Press reports at the time speculated on his health. Donald Pleasance passed away in England on February 2nd, 1995, shortly after completing additional dialogue for the film.
I was in Vancouver working on the Outer Limits TV series when I heard that he had passed away, and I was in the car and it said on the radio, oh,
this is,
you know,
Greg
Dr.
Nicotero.
Loomis from the Halloween series, Donald Pleasance has passed away. And I remember going back to my hotel and calling John Carpenter immediately and just saying, I'm really sorry, because John, they were really tight.
How about working with Donald Pleasance on the last one? How was that for everybody?
Great.
Really wonderful.
An honor.
Yeah. It is amazing. And this series is not the same without him, I have to say.
And yeah, that was Donald. I found some really rare audio. This was Donald Pleasance, one of the last things he said about Halloween 6, and I just wanted to share it with you guys. Anyway, that one got Jeremy really good, which just feels phenomenal. I love when I get Jeremy surprised and he's crying right now. He's crying. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Gosh.
Jesus, you don't like my stage 4 joke. So
I love what he had to say about the film.
No.
But with the returning Dr. Loomis and all the changes, a guy who really wants to make the series work, a writer who is a true fan of the series, problems persisted.
An obvious part of making a studio film is you have to do a test screening. For better or for worse, some people don't like it, some do, some filmmakers don't like it, some tolerate it.
The test screenings were filled with mostly like 14-year-old boys, I think. But I heard one very articulate 14-year-old boy said on the Q&A afterwards, the ending sucked.
I wouldn't have wanted someone to ask me, well, my opinion of how Jaws should have been re-edited when I was 17. I would have ruined the fucking movie, you know? Jeez, how could I have made The Wild Bunch better when I was 14?
Halloween 6 did not perform well in the test screenings, and the film was suddenly rushed back into production. without Donald Pleasence and without creative input from Daniel Ferrans. What resulted was a drastic overhaul, leading to almost a third of the film being shot again.
Halloween 6 had an original cut. Director was happy, but this was the first time Miramax was sandwiched onto the deal. They looked at it and they wanted a different ending. And it had to be more extravagant and a little crazier and a little more psychedelic and a little more mad.
Dimension had other ideas about how it should end, and the whole cult sequence was eliminated.
Hello, dear.
Despite the backing from Miramax, the film was again a critical failure, and the future looked bleaker than ever for the series. However, the late 90s also saw the rise of the internet, and the fans continued to...
So the rise of the internet, though, after all this happened, actually unearthed what's called the producer's cut, a separate movie completely redone just for basically the producer's cut ends up being like the Akkad and director's version, while the Miramax version is the theatrical cut that most people saw in theaters. And pretty significant differences between the two, and I wanted to go over that, but first let's take you just through some of the plot of this movie, which tries to explain the shithole that we're in. Jamie from the first one basically is captured by the cult from part five, who breaks Michael Myers out of jail. She has a baby, but she's able to escape with the help of some nice nurse. Loomis hears Jamie call into a radio shock jock thing that he just happens to be listening to with his buddy Dr. Wynn from Smith's Grove. Paul Rudd plays Danny, who's obsessed with Michael Myers since the first film. Kara Strode and the rest of the Strode nephews and nieces live in the old Myers house across the street from him. Michael goes on a murdering rampage to kill the rest of the Strode family. Danny ends up finding Steve Strode, which is the son of Jamie and her baby, and they keep it basically keeps him safe until they meet up with he meets up with Kara and explains why Michael is Michael is who he is and why he's kind of like supernatural, and it's all because of the Cult of the Thorn, which is some weird pagan fucking thing that like it just he has to kill his whole family, and that's why he's also supernatural, and this cult is also the Cult of Thorn that kind of protects him and does some stuff. And lots of differences between the movie, but the biggest one is the third act, which we'll get to. Two completely different endings to this movie. One, which Akkad and them really kind of supported, which is, for all intents and purposes, fucking ridiculous, if I'm going to be honest with you. But it makes, at least it makes sense in the context of the films. Some other major differences in the movie is, like, if you watch the theatrical cut, it's very much, like, super 90s and trying to be cool. There's no real, like, Halloween John Carpenter music that's, like, predominant throughout the film. Instead, there's just like random like grunge songs. There's also lots of weird little cut scenes where it's just like, even when they're talking, they try to just make it extreme. We're just like shink shink shink, and I'm like, what? Why did we need to see that? I don't know. But the producer's cut is a much more Halloween style movie, like the previous ones, where it's straight through. The original John Carpenter score is featured much more predominantly throughout, and the theatrical cut is 100 times more gorier. It's fucking like every kill just has like Mortal Kombat style violence, as opposed to this, the producer's cut, which is a little bit more subdued. People get stabbed, but you don't see the knife going in. There's not a ton of blood. It's very much more a traditional Halloween film in that respect. Some other major differences, fucking Jamie's character dies in a much more gory way in one. She it, like in the theatrical cut, Michael finds her and then puts her on like a hay baler and just gets fucking reamed out, kind of like in the Dolph Lundgren in Universal Soldier, as opposed to the theatrical or the producer's cut where she survives an attack by Michael, but then the cult just shoots her in the head in her hospital room. So some differences here and there. A lot of it has to do with gore because Miramax was like, nope, we gotta make a fucking gory ass movie. That's what we're here for. And those are all the major differences. Until you get to the third act, because the third act, there is the, you know, there's this cult that's there. They abduct Kara Strode and then take her son, and the baby back to Smith's Grove, where in the producer's cut, they're having a pagan ritual with Dr. Wynn, who ends up being the man in black. Paul Rudd comes to save the day dressed as one of these weird pagan druids, and a chase ensues where Paul Rudd uses magical runes to encase Michael Myers and stop him, and he goes, and then they walk outside after the chase and he's like, sweet, the fucking runes worked. And then
for a second I thought it was Laugh Finder Game Night.
Yes, it could have been Laugh Finder Game Night. It really could have. They all go to leave.
Let's see if Michael Myers can handle this 32 die.
Dr. Loomis then goes in to go check on him, but Dr. Wynn is talking about finds Michael first and how disappointed he is, but you could see him pull the fucking classic Arthur hand clinch as he's like shitting on him. When Dr. Loomis comes, he sees that Michael is on the floor. He goes to pull the mask off and finds it's Dr. Wynn. Dr. Wynn grabs Dr. Loomis's hand. He goes, it's your game now, doctor. And the mark of Thorn all of a sudden shows up on fucking Loomis's hand, and you hear him
so
look. It's so dumb, and he just looks at it, and then just
the curse of
like
Thorn tattoo appears on his wrist. I'm sorry, what the fuck?
Yes, that with the Loomis scream right there. He just looks at it, and then you see Michael Myers with no mask or anything, just walking around in Dr. Wynn's black fucking booted man costume, looking back and be like, yup, we're going to keep doing this. And yeah, fucking wild ending. Now the theatrical cut, totally different ending. They bring her back to Smith's Grove, and Paul Rudd and Dr. Loomis try to go break out Kara. They are able to get the baby and her, but Michael, who doesn't like to be used, then goes on a murderous rampage with a surgical machete. Never seen a surgical machete ever, but ends up killing an additional like 10 or 11 doctors during this scene.
Wait, are you saying surgical machete, or was it just a bone saw?
No, it's a machete that is made in like a surgical style. I don't think that's real. I've never been like, scalpel, plunger, sponge, surgical machete. like I don't
she has
understand.
A very thick leg we need to remove.
Yes, it makes
I'm pretty
no sense.
Sure that's part of every medical table when they have to do an amputation of somebody that's like 800 pounds and they want to just one clear chop. So.
Do you want dark meat or white?
But I didn't understand. It's like all the occult doctors getting together in a room like they were going to like carve up the baby or carve up the little kid or something. They don't really give their intentions.
Yeah, it's weird. They in the theatrical cut, there's like a lab that looks like fucking the Power Rangers Zordon room that has like fetuses, like they're doing some type of test to create some other type of Michael Myers. I guess I forgot to mention this. In the producer's cut, it just basically says that Michael Myers raped fucking... What's her name? Put the baby
Jamie,
in her? Yeah.
Which is bananas, because it's like there has never, ever, that I am aware of, which I'm pretty sure we're all in agreement, we've never once seen Michael as a sexual creature. If you look at Halloween 1. No,
that guy does not fuck. He does not fuck.
No, when he is in the sheet, remember? And is it PJ?
Yeah, PJ Souls, yeah, correct.
Who has them big old titties, and he could have totally like groped her before he killed her. He has no sexual desire for her in any way, shape, or form. So you're trying to convince me that Michael Myers saw his own niece, didn't even do it to his own sister in the first movie, but he sees his niece, who's like 9 at the time, and he's like, you know what? I'd like to fuck her someday. Makes no sense.
Yeah. Michael Myers, before part 6, you know, that Michael Myers, he liked a traditional porn. Michael Myers in part 6, he's more of a millennial porn guy. He needs the stepsister. He needs something like that to really get him off. That is... Well,
but unfortunately, without the incest storyline, all the other storylines don't really make sense as to why Jamie would be pregnant at 15 in the first place.
It is true. Well, they do say that it's Dr. Wynn's baby in the producer's cut.
In the theatrical cut.
I think it's inferred that it's his.
I think they tested with audiences and they said the incest was too gross. And I'm like, that's where we're cutting it. We're like, you know what? This is the part where we're too gross, and Harvey's like, damn, I thought that was going to get in the final cut.
Yeah, I got, damn it, Harvey, you messed it up again, trying to put in the incest in the movie. Here you go.
I'm a film real fan of Mitchell Ryan, the guy who played Wynn in this, because he had a really good role in Electric Glide in Blue with whatever his name, Robert Blake. He plays the older cop who gets completely owned in front of Robert Blake because they're both banging the same woman.
Hell yeah.
And it's just a great part, but it's like 1972 or something. But he was still looking good. I think he's like 80, 90 now or something.
If he's still alive, he'd have to be, because I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he also in Liar Liar with Jim Carrey? Wasn't he?
Yes.
And he was old then. So.
Yeah, he's born in 35, so.
Jesus.
Or 34, so. Yeah.
So, Michael ends up killing like a good dozen doctors at the end of this movie when Paul Rudd finally finds some corrosive liquid in a syringe, injects it into Michael Myers' neck, and then beats the fuck out of him with a lead pipe until yellow shit starts coming out of his eyes, holes in his mask.
It turns out that the green stuff was just aloe.
It was just, I'm filled with aloe vera, the most evilest of gels.
Because you expect, maybe he should start becoming the toxic Michael Myers or something.
And that brings us to an end of both of them. Now, my take on the producer's cut versus the theatrical cut, which are significantly different, I feel like there's a better movie between the two, that if you use parts from both, there's a slightly better movie. That's not to say it would be good. It would still be fucking bad. They're all pretty bad, but I feel like I kind of like the gorier kills. Like, if you watch the producer's cut, they're all pretty tame kills, but I kind of like the gore that's added to it at parts. Like, when they kill the dad, the Strode dad, he puts him on, the circuit breaker, and he starts foaming at the mouth in the theatrical cut, until the part where they actually show his head explode. And that's a pretty cool head explosion. I was like, I like that. But I wish it was in the producer's cut. There's a scene in the opening where Jamie's escaping from the beginning of the movie from like the Smith's Grove, where she just had her baby. She's trying to flee, and Michael Myers snaps some dude's net. In the producer's cut, it's just a Steven Seagal straight up boom. My neck gets twisted. Mm-hmm. And the theatrical cut, you see spinal cord jutting out of his fucking head like this, and blood squirting. Right. I'm like, I kind of like that. I kind of like those little touches. I'd say the story overall, at least, even though it's fucking bad, makes sense in the producer's cut. Though I like how it's more of a traditional Halloween film. I like the original fucking Halloween score that goes along with it. I wish they just added the gore into the producer's cut, and it probably would have been a decent enough movie. Nah, maybe not that far, but it would have been slightly better.
I I like to think that this is the third in a series of bad hospital movies where if you're in a hospital and you're in the basement, then you know you're in a bad hospital. It's like, oh, you're getting wheeled down to the, you know, the druidic sacrifice room. You know, it's where you're going to deliver your baby with all the candles and maybe get it, like, sacrificed.
I like it. They just have, like, Paul Rudd, who's, like, another character who's who's played by Paul Rudd, just looks like, first time here, huh? Welcome.
Of course, the first and second in the series would be Hellraiser 2, where they keep all the psychopaths in weird rooms in the bed hospital.
I love that movie.
And then, of course, there's Jacob's Ladder with what's his name from the Shawshank Redemption.
Tim Robbins.
Where he's like, oh great, I'm down with all the freaks and the guy and the doctor that doesn't have any eyes now. That's great. I'm going to get operated on a doctor with no eyes. So I think he's never done anything other real movie, but I think this is probably an okay movie for Dave Chappelle, you know, being a director and everything. He's only done television otherwise, so.
I forgot to mention this earlier in the movie, but I will also say there is something significant about this film. I can't think of another movie that shows a solid, I swear, 30 to 40 seconds of child penis other than this film, because there is a child dick shot in the opening scene of this movie that goes far too long for this child's penis. And like, as I was watching, I was like,
wrong. I saw that and I was like, oh my God. I was like, Eric's going to be so mad that they put him in this movie.
Oh man, I'll have you know I'm half that size. I was just like, man, they really showed a lot of this kid's dick. Man, they're really zooming in on this kid's dick. I need to not see this. I'll let you know, it took me out of the movie seeing this child's dick the whole time. Mostly they were legal reasons. Like, I was like, should I even be seeing this right now? I feel like no is a solid answer for that.
Yeah, but what about the Nirvana baby? He had how many millions of albums sold with his dick on the cover of that?
That is true. That is true.
I feel this could really work for another Halloween film where maybe Michael Myers' clothes get like burned away or something, and then one of the women that he's following kind of like points out that he has a small dick. So then like they like, you know, they go back to the moment where he was laying there in the catacombs of the hospital with his small, tiny penis. Like, oh, man, I do have a small dick.
He's in search of the one Strode that has a big dick. That's why he kills every one of them, because every time he's like, no, another small penis. Nah, like that.
It's because they once called him Mrs. Myers in elementary school.
Actually, that's the reason he didn't kill Jamie, because Jamie had a slightly bigger dick than him. Like, he ran into Jamie, he was like, oh, your penis is much larger than mine.
Michael, you can't kill me. I have a penis, too.
And Loomis is just helping him, like, put him out of his misery. He's like, I have to kill Michael so no more women have to see his tiny dick.
Michael is very, very much, he's just completely concentrating on his small penis. That is why he has to kill everyone, and he's so evil. I'm Donald Pleasance. Please listen to Puma Man for me.
Puma Man! Oh, he's back. Hell yeah. Puma Man. Oh, God, yeah. And yeah, I guess that brings us to an end of Halloween 6 and Halloween for this year. You'll have to tune in 2021 Halloween time to see if we can finish off the series and have a goddamn break from this shit. Ashley, what are your final thoughts on this film?
You know what? If you tie this into Season of the Witch with all that weird rune shit and the idea that Michael's mask is a shamrock mask, this one would make sense. But I'm going to call it a big old fat, greasy turd.
Fat, greasy turd? That's your take. I got it. Jeremy, what do you got?
I would rewrite the end of the series where Michael is at actual Stonehenge, and he has his robot army together with him to take on everybody, so, and kill all children of the world.
Okay. All right. Respect. I would say if I were to give one word sentence, in fact, I'll give a 2-word review of this film. It's they tried. They tried.
By the way, I would call it Halloween versus RoboCop.
Halloween versus RoboCop. Peter Weller in his most riveting performance. A man that barely talks versus a man that doesn't talk at all. Who will be the survivor?
And by the way, the leader of Silver Shamrock is also the head of OCP. So.
Ah, I like it. That is there true. You are true. Oh, man, we're really combining universes. Star Trek, RoboCop, who knows? Maybe they're going to take on a Xenomorph. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. It's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Also, you can see links to all the things fucking Quality Time, including our store, the Quality Time Brothers Emporium, where you can get yourself a Pogo the Clown Gator mask. Get it on your face so you don't get COVID-19. Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
You can always find me on social media at Ashley Pontius Laughs. And you can also see me, I believe, upcoming in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania on Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Check all that shit out. She's got some big shows coming up. I got some big shows. Check that out all on Air Comedy. Jeremy, take us out.
You can fix Halloween 6. I have a time machine. I'm Ant-Man.